good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Not So Shy John, and this is the Not So Shy John News. It's just about 3 o'clock within minutes, and I'm having a show today. And it's a funny thing, I was going to wing it my whole show today. Didn't have any plans. I made some notes, thought of a couple of things I could do, and then I was thinking, well, if Tucker comes, I'm going to be happy that he's going to be here, and if I don't hear from him, well, then I'm just going to wing it anyway. And as a matter of fact, guess who's here? Hey.
Oh.
There he is.
Merry, Merry Christmas.
And we're checking the levels and making sure.
And a happy, happy Wednesday.
You're not
you
a
all.
Lot of work later. Okay.
And, how you doing, John?
Hanging in there. Yep. Hanging in there. Reading the news. Staying on top of the news. A curious thing happened. I inherited another show this week.
Oh, man.
I have another show.
What show are you now going to inherit?
I am now going to be doing the weekly news and review that Bennett has been doing since the week before 9/11.
Wow.
That's how long Bennett's been doing the weekly news and review. And God bless him, he's going to still be around, but he's stepping back a little bit because he's burning out, and I can totally appreciate that. I really can.
You know, that's one way to put it. Another way would be that the Illuminati threatened him to stop broadcasting. Or
the
else
men in black?
Yeah,
yeah.
Waterboard him down at Gitmo.
Well, he might enjoy that. I don't know. Bennett's, you know, he's a little out there.
That's like his form of recreational exercise.
Have a good afternoon, y'all.
Peace.
All
yeah,
right.
You know, waterboarding is kind of the new yoga.
There you go.
You know, weight loss.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you've got issues, you can just, you know, just stretch them right out.
There you go.
Stretch them out. Flush them out.
So, you know. So, anyway, so, yeah, I brought some CDs in, and now I see Tucker has brought some cool stuff in, too.
Well, I got
so,
a little list.
Yeah, we'll have to call
funny
it up.
Stuff, man.
That's good.
So
that's
I brought
good.
Some funny things.
Because there's been too much serious stuff going on and too much worry and fear out there, you know, just so many. I think that's part of them controlling us. I really do. It's keeping us locked down like that.
I do, but, you know, just the same way as always, my favorite comedy is edgy shit that talks about all the things that we're already going over on this show.
You know, that's what makes comedy, is it, you know, comedy on current events. God, John, what's his name? John Stewart.
Yeah.
Cracks me up.
I like Stephen Colbert, too.
Oh, man, yeah, yeah.
They're good guys. I brought some comic legends today, and all three of them have a similar unifying quality, which is that they've passed on.
Mm.
They're all comedy legends that are now part of the great ethos. And no
more music by dead guys.
Well, not just dead guys, but dead atheists, so they're not in heaven, according to them. They're just in the ethos.
You know, I don't know if you really get a choice and it's going to be what it's going to be, but I have a strong feeling that it's not like the fairy tale Christian Bible version. I really have doubts.
Well, I mean,
the universe is bigger than that.
They don't have enough money up there for harps, you know? I mean, they're probably going to give you, like, you know, a kazoo.
That'd be good. I'd work at that.
You can have a kazoo, mm-hmm. and then after you've earned 5 years' worth of angel stripes, then I think you might get upgraded to, say, a harmonica.
Yeah?
I know
I'm
you know how to play
there,
that.
Baby.
I mean, you're a master
there.
A master of the mouth harp, as my father is.
Yeah.
Tim Booth,
yeah.
If you're listening, hello. Oh, he's got it with him.
I have called
that. I'm
rusty.
I'm not going to heaven blues.
No, that's the I am going to heaven blues. That's the spirit in the sky.
The
that's,
pearly gate
that's,
blues.
Play that at my funeral, okay?
St. Peter's blues.
Okay.
Nice.
Enough of that.
So, John, I was on the bus again. I know I was telling you how I've been riding public transportation.
Uh-huh.
And the great part about it is not that I love the people watching as much as I love the reading time. I know
both.
I told you that.
Both.
But I think the reading time is so valuable. And, folks, that's just another plug for why you should take public transportation and learn how to not drive everywhere you go. If you live anywhere close to where you work, please save the environment.
Save money.
Save
for
money.
Real. For what it costs to run a car.
And dude, you have time to read. Do you ever have time to read otherwise, besides maybe on the toilet? That's about the only time I really do any reading.
That's really true. That's the rest of the time on the web. Yeah. Well, I do a lot of reading on the web, though.
The web's kind of a toilet, too.
This is true.
Digital toilet. Anyways, I was reading the Rolling Stone, and who's on the cover? We got our boy Mormon Mitt. Greed and Debt, the True Story of Mitt Romney and Bain Capital by Matt Taibbi.
You rang. Yeah.
Very interesting. If you can go get the new Rolling Stone issue 1165, it's very interesting. Also, there's a great story about the Occupy case currently being prosecuted against the Cleveland Five. I'm sure any conspiratory type person knows this story, but five wayward stoner waifs from Cleveland were talked into a bridge bombing terrorist plot by a government informant who was a criminal who had been already caught and basically bankrolled these guys and talked them into planting fake C4 explosives that were given to them by the FBI on a large commuter bridge in the Cleveland area.
I have a question. Since you read the whole article,
yes.
Bankrolled by who?
Well, they bought the pretend C4 and, you know, the pretend weapons from an FBI agent who was undercover.
Okay, so they probably had money to trade back and forth for that. But I mean, what you're saying,
they didn't make them pay all the money too. That was another thing. I mean, it was the most like
haphazard
way of procuring this. I mean, they basically let them work to make the money through this informant's company that he had, where he rehabbed houses. So they actually paid for all this through a job for the informant who was already in trouble with the same people.
But he still, that was he really what his business was. Then he had, you know,
stuff going
on. He had a
business that was failing, but he was passing bad checks through the business and had gotten in legal trouble for that as well.
Okay, and they let him keep the business up just as a front.
Well,
probably.
He basically got out of trouble because he led the FBI to these so-called
they let him walk.
Terrorists.
Oh, shit. See, now, how can the cop on the street be judge, jury, and sentencer and say, okay, I'll tell you what, you know, I'll let you go, okay, if you turn tail and, you know, work for us.
But this
is
even more sad than that, because it seems like they subversively created terrorists out of idealistic, wayward hippie waifs that were looking for some kind of cause in Occupy. And obviously, we've been critical of Occupy. It didn't fulfill the dreams of most of these young idealists. But still, they take people that don't really have any direction, give them a guy that acts like a father figure, gives them money, gives them drugs, gives them alcohol, gives them a place to stay because they're homeless, and then kind of keeps prodding them with this idea of, well, Art, do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? And granted, you know, if I'm a prosecuting attorney, these kids still consented to helping blow up a bridge, in theory. They did. So, you know, bottom line is, no matter how stoned you are, you need to know that that's wrong.
That's pretty fucking serious.
So
yeah.
They do need to learn from this, obviously. But if the government and the FBI is actually creating terror suspects in order to bust terror suspects, does that really make us feel any safer? Or does that make us feel like the government
that's
is infiltrating Occupy just to make people
when you
worse
said,
than they are?
When you said, okay, we have a government FBI informant that they stuck into the Occupy movement. And I thought,
as a mole.
As a mole, you go in and you sit by the wayside, or maybe you're active in the group and show that you're, you know, of the same spirit and of the same task, right? But, and then you inform on them. See, that I thought that was an informant, where they were, you know, let's find out if these guys are planning anything violent. I mean, that's valid, you know?
Well, and basically, I guess they said that this man's strategy, his name was Shaquille Ariz. He's not Shaquille O'Neal's cousin. Shaquille Ariz
sounds Muslim.
He was actually an African American man. He basically would talk to these anarchist type guys, let them vent all their crazy ideas as they would, and then start kind of goading them, like, "Well, are you serious? Do you really want to do that?
What do you
really
think? They really are fucked,
it's
aren't they?
It's almost kind of like philosophically goading them into taking it further, and then
it's
all
like, well,
the while
I have the ways
as a
and the means
with the FBI.
Yeah,
going
yeah.
back and forth."
Oh, it sounds pure shady.
Yeah,
it really
was.
It sounds,
but anyways, if you're interested in that story,
you know, I mean,
that's also
like
a new Rolling Stone.
That makes it a larger government kind of a plot to say, we're not only going to inform on them, but we're going to mess them up. We're going to make it so that you know, we're going to bring charges against them and turn it into a big federal case so that, you know, we can shut them down harder than just shutting them down.
Well, it almost seems like because people are so suspicious of these Occupy folks, especially those that are on the other side of the, you know, political fence,
mm-hmm.
that by creating a case where, you know, suspected terror suspects are brought to justice, it makes, you know, upper class America feel safer. Makes
yeah.
them feel like capitalism is being preserved a little bit.
Yeah.
That some
yeah.
of these ideals they're fighting for still are safe.
Uh-huh.
And I do think they're safe regardless of whether dumb Occupy kids try and blow up a bridge.
Well, there's a cop on every corner.
Yeah,
you know?
And let's face it, Occupy wasn't working. That's why no one is still.
We were talking about it last week that, you know, Occupy became a homeless encampment and a bunch of hippie nomads who really had no roots and had no plan.
I said to your boy Randy that it reminded me a lot of Woodstock because a bunch of the same people were still there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then they ruined the lawn on City Hall. I mean, my goodness.
Although I gotta say, seeing people blowing bong hits up at City Hall in downtown LA on the anniversary of Jack Herrera's Proposition 215, which mm-hmm. legalized medical marijuana in California.
Wow.
They handed out over 3 pounds of medicinal marijuana.
Wow.
At the Occupy in front of the courthouse.
Wow.
And were blowing bong hits at the courthouse down there.
And they couldn't do anything about it. Or
well,
they didn't
they
do anything about it.
They had negotiated a temporary peace with the sheriff.
We're going to have a hiatus here. We're not going to cause any trouble. Yeah.
And everybody. And because there were older liberal folks that were kind of running it.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
so once again, that's why Occupy didn't work, was it was saying it's this, you know, everybody has a share in the leadership, almost uh-huh. like a Kill Radio, where
yeah.
it's horizontal leadership.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. The older folks were the power base.
Inevitably,
they were calling the shots.
That
that's
happens.
The way it works.
You know, I mean, just like when we have a Kill Radio meeting, you know, it's the OGs who step forward, you
and
know,
run it.
And pretty much call the shots. But, you know, I mean, if they know, what's it, Robert's rules
yeah,
of parliamentary
engagement.
Procedure,
yeah.
you know, I mean, they follow that, then that's appropriate, you know. But there inevitably ends up being a leader, you know.
Right, because but, otherwise then
see,
we'd all be a bunch of occupiers.
But that dichotomy of having the horizontal leadership as well, it took them out of focus and took away their unified front. It
right.
really did. They weren't a wedge. They were more like just a mess
yeah.
on the floor.
You know, and I do wish all those idealistic Occupy people the best, because I think that there does need to be more done to
yeah.
raise awareness of alternative living to fuck you, pay me.
I was talking to Bennett,
to
and we agreed, you know, I mean, they brought the 99% into the lexicon, you know.
It's true, that term is going to be in the lexicon now forever, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for that, you know, they really made a mark. They really did. And, you know, and it is likely that we haven't heard the last of them. However, I think the feds are there to crush them. And that's a terrible, terrible thing. You know, it just further exemplifies the loss of our freedoms and the lack of democracy going on.
But, you know, this may be the first time I say this in public, but I don't seem to find much of a difference between Mr. Romney and Mr. Obama anymore. I don't. And
less
I hate
and less.
To say it, because I was one of these people that voted for Barack and thought
mm-hmm.
he was going to bring all the change and the hope.
Well, now it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's sad because it reminds me of 2004, like we were joking about in here, when it was Bush and Kerry, and really, I couldn't even see a difference between these two men.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
They just seem like two heads of the same Leviathan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't
know?
Own a TV, so I haven't been watching the conventions like hour
either,
upon
man.
Hour, which I might if I had one, but I have a strong feeling that they're both going to come across as, you know, backslapping, self-aggrandizement, self-effacing, you know, we're all in this together and those bad guys over there, and further, you know, create the division, which inevitably happens in an election. But it's only a two-party system. You know, in Canada, they have four parties. Did you know that? Or
yeah,
is it Australia?
And two of them
are sponsored
by Molson Ice Beer.
Well, there you go. I wouldn't be surprised. But, sponsored. See, that's the whole problem. The super PAC that makes large corporations able to give millions of dollars to the candidate of their choice. Republicans are getting, you know, like 3 to 5 times as much money as the Democrats because, of course, big business is going to back the Republicans, as is the media.
And then Hollywood is going to back the Democrats.
Yeah, yeah. Us wackos out in California, the crazy hippies and you fruits, nuts, and flakes, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, and of course the Jews that run the media.
Well, there is that. Yeah, that is also true. There is, you know, no small amount of money to be made, to be sure.
No Jews run Kill Radio, folks. This is a completely Jew-free zone. In fact, we're actually pretty anti-Semitic here.
Interdenominational.
Oh, wait a minute. Now they can see right through me. Oh, man. So I also thought of some music that I thought was absolutely apropos to all of this that we're talking about, dude. This last week, I had kind of one of those nostalgic flashbacks where you think about bands from your childhood that, like, not only, like, remind you of romantic times gone by, but also that embody the spirit of what we're talking about, the true rebellious spirit creatively, and that never sold out, which is Kill Radio's true mark of greatness, I would say, is being kick-ass with never selling out. It's Fugazi. And I know all my fans out, my friends and fans out there, Fugazi was a very 90s kind of band, but they were a 90s kind of band that even the alt-rock world barely gave any credit to. It was Ian MacKaye from Minor Threat, which is a very popular early straight-edge punk band that was hugely influential in the early movement. Mm-hmm. He joined up with Fugazi, made some of the greatest freaking emo punk albums ever.
It's true.
Ever.
It's true.
I only brought a couple to play, but I figure at some point we gotta rock the fuck out to some truly anti-corporate music, man. And I brought songs that speak on it, because they loved to rail on anti-corporate messages.
That's true.
But you were also saying you wanted some comedy, so, you know, I thought George Carlin. Everybody loves George Carlin, rest in peace. Bill Hicks, the legendary Bill Hicks, rest in peace. Gosh, 94 Bill Hicks passed on.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And Mitch Hedberg recently passed on. Mitch Hedberg, one of these guys everybody slept on, who is a true genius. And I figured little Zach Galifianakis.
Absolutely.
He's pretty hot right now.
Absolutely.
He's kind of like the new Curly Howard, really, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in those Hangover movies, dude.
Yeah.
The funny fat dude.
That's true. That's true. He's,
yeah.
And you've got some stand-up, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Zach talking about smoking weed on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Thought that might be kind of funny. Smoking weed makes me laugh.
I cannot find the song that sprang to mind. I wanted to play the Dickies doing Oop, Eep, Ock, Oh. You know that song? You never heard that one?
Let's,
I have it on vinyl.
Let's do it.
I can't find it.
You
it's
know,
not here.
While you're still looking, I also was reading in the album reviews, Bob Dylan's 35th studio album came out this week, Tempest.
Oh, yeah, Bennett was all over that. He did a whole show.
I can't wait to hear it. They gave it a perfect score. I know they kissed Bob's ass in Rolling Stone, but let's be fair, Bob Dylan is amazing.
Yeah, well, they released a single in advance, there's one out there, yeah.
We should try and drag that up in the show and play him Bob's new single. That'd be sweet.
It is not here.
But also, what I was going to say is, in the album reviews section of Rolling Stone, there was a review of our friend and former Frozen Food alumnus, Serengeti.
Wow.
Yeah, his new album on Anticon Records, produced by Jell and Odd Nosdem, is called C-A-R, like car, but spelled, you know, with acronym style, C.A.R. They gave it 3.5 stars. A Windy City Rappers Rye Old School Throwback. And they gave it a very favorable review. So congratulations, Dave Cohn, a.k.a. Serengeti. Please go get his new album, C-A-R, on Anticon Records.
I wonder if he's got any up on the cloud or anything.
I know he's all over Bandcamp. If you go to Bandcamp.com, we're going to be playing some music off there in a little bit. You can type in Serengeti. Well, actually, I had one song I was going to play. So we'll play a little Serengeti, and you guys can check out some of the flavor in a little bit. For sure. Did you ever find that?
I have that bookmark. Never did. I've got an Iggy Pop lined up, and I've got a some Beastie Boys lined up. So
those are two groups I'm absolutely in love with.
Yeah?
Let's do it.
Yeah. I'm partial to this this one song. I played it before. Okay, I just, you know, you play your favorites, right? This is from the CD called Beat 'Em Up.
Beat 'Em Up.
I rather like the title cut. So let's see if it'll play here.
gently.
Come on, dog.
Album. Can you get my drift?
Beastie Boys, Ill Communication, 94, son. Till Infinity,
go.
MCA, rest in peace, another very creative force who passed away this year.
Yeah.
That's too bad, man. But your music lives on, and you've inspired me and many others, so rest in peace, brother man.
You know, and I guess that's the gift that they give the world, that we are left with to remember them by is, you know, the legacy of their passing.
Definitely. And the fact that he revolutionized rock and hip-hop and played a humongous role in making it not just popular but also meaningful, political.
Mm-hmm.
He raised awareness about Tibet. Shit,
yeah.
People that were fans of Beastie Boys didn't even know where Tibet was on a map before they did the Free Tibet concert.
That's true. A lot of those people.
He worked with the Dalai Lama.
Wow.
He did a lot of cool stuff. And he was a movie producer down the stretch. He did the MCA produced that movie in the Valley of Elah, I think it was called, with Tommy Lee Jones. It was about the military.
Wow.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's The Messenger. That one with Woody Harrelson, where the military guys have to go and tell people their son got killed in the war.
Wow.
He produced that before he passed.
Wow.
He helped produce it. So, MCA, you were a creative force to be reckoned with in many mediums. So we got a Fugazi triple play lined up, right, John?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Dude, it is 90s Wednesday here. All right, so anybody who says fuck you to the 1%, this one's for y'all. I think we're starting with which album? I can't even remember. This is Let It Rock.
Sure.
90s.
Yeah, the 90s. Yeah, way back when.
They were cool. God, we were headbanging like children in here. There's Beavis and Butthead up in the studio for a hot second.
For real, for real.
So we're Sav Gray, man.
Yeah,
Sav,
we got a call.
We got our boy Sav Gray in the STL, one of my STLA syndicate members who goes back and forth, the hip-hop hobo from Savage Tribe. Sav Gray, if you're out there, call back, man. We'll put you on for sure.
STLA.
STLA represent. Sav's got a bunch of great music out there online. I'm pretty sure if you're on SoundCloud, you can find Sav Gray. It's S-A-V and then Gray, like the color gray. So type that in and check out all of his new tunes on SoundCloud. And I'm pretty sure he's on YouTube as well. Yeah. And if you call back, Sav, we'll also give you a free case of Turtle Wax. What a deal.
Throw it in.
So you can hear all the hustle and bustle of the Koreatown Hollywood traffic going on outside.
The mics actually pick up surprisingly little.
Well, you know, we do hear the sirens, though.
You can throw that one out the window. I always thought of putting this one in the windowsill and just turning it up, you know, when there was any action going on, just to make that your special guest.
That could be a show on Kill Radio. We can just call it, like, Traffic.
Traffic.
And occasionally you'll play a song by Steve Winwood's Traffic. Just to juxtapose
be your theme
the two.
Song. Yeah.
But you still have the sound of Traffic in the background while you play Traffic.
There's a lot of it. The more I see Traffic, the less I miss my car over time.
I'm telling you, know, the bus stank like a hobo's encampment today. It was especially noxious on there. I mean,
yeah,
the smell.
It's been humid. It's
I had
been
a
humid.
Mouth breathe. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't use the nose.
Oh man!
But still, even with that discomfort,
and you can't move to a new place.
Sacrifice compared to all the horseshit on the highway, folks. We all know how awful road rage. Is.
I watched a girl get her car towed away out my window this afternoon before I came in, and I thought, just the tragedy in her life. She was crushed, and they left her standing there. You know, they talked to her for an hour and just left her on the sidewalk and towed her car away, and she was just, you know.
What color was she?
She was brown. She was brown. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound any more biased than that.
Well, hard to say.
There he is, Sav.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Hey, all right, so we got to hold it up.
You
to
get
the,
it? Here. No, all I got to do is just hit the phone. Here.
All right. What's up, Kill Radio?
Yeah, it was good, Sav.
What's going on, Savers? How you doing, buddy?
Shit. Just giving you a call back, bro.
So you're in the U-City Loop in St. Louis right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going on back there in the Loop?
Shit. I don't even know, man. For real, I've been hibernating, just working on shit for real.
What's the new music, man, or what's the new project you're touting?
I got a part two in the works for the Time Wasters Cheap Thrills mixtape that came out in June. It's called Intensified Effects.
Where can you find that one?
Say it again.
Where can we find that one online?
I haven't dropped it yet. I don't have like a release date for it as of yet, but still in the recording process, you know what I'm saying?
I hear that.
But
it seems like everybody's been hibernating in St. Louis a little bit that I know in the scene, but they're all working on one project or another, so it's not complete hibernation, I guess. It's just not being out at the club scene as much.
Yeah, no, I don't try to stay from away from all that shit. I always getting ruckus when I go out to the clubs. So I try to stay away from that status quo.
Occupy your apartment.
Is it staying out of trouble?
Straight up.
Staying out of trouble and working.
That's all good for real. I seen y'all was doing a frozen food section on Kill Radio. Haven't tuned in or called up in a while, so I figured I'd show some homage.
Well, I saw that you tweeted about us and tweeted about the Not So Shy John show being on today. So thank you very much on behalf of us here. That was very kind of you.
No worries.
I did promise our listeners that we would be reading some Facebook and tweets, and we will. So stick around, folks. That will be soon enough. And in the meantime, Sav, you got any shout outs before we move on with our broadcast today?
Yeah, shout out to DJ Bobby. Tucker
all right,
Booth,
Radio Cindy.
Always showing love.
Yes, sir.
Frozen food section is that business. Always has been in St. Louis, always will be.
Oh,
frozen
thank
food
you for
section,
that.
Go download music.
Thank you for that, all the way from Redondo Beach to the U-City Loop.
Straight up.
The STLA.
Old dog town holding it down.
Dog Tezzy, dude.
And now, you know, you're reaching, eventually, you'll reach the world over by podcast.
Men with Beards project, too.
Oh, yeah, Men with Beards. And what were you saying, John?
He can't hear me. I was going to say, eventually, you're going to reach the world over via podcast, because a lot of people pick up this show after we put it up.
That's right, Sav. So we'll play some Sav Gray in the weeks to come here. We'll definitely play some of the music you sent me, bud.
That's what's up. It's all love, yeah.
All right, we love you, too.
Next time I make my way out west, I'm going to have to slide through the studio.
If you come back through, you got to come through the studio for sure. We always love having people from out of town come through.
That's what it is, yeah. Well,
right
I appreciate
on, bud.
You letting me speak some peace. Y'all enjoy the rest of the show. I
for sure.
Will.
Well, thank you for the call, sir.
It's all good, yo. Take
all
it
right,
easy,
peace.
Guys.
Sav Gray from St. Louis, State of Misery, folks.
Way cool.
Thank
See?
You for the call and the Twitter support. So what do we got next, John? You got some more music for us?
Well, I got your George Collin lined up.
Ooh.
He's good to go.
So I found this recording of Carlin. This isn't even live stand-up. This is actually a studio recording. Tips for serial killers. You know, because I've been very fascinated with crime lately. So, you know, here's some tips from George from beyond the grave.
Uh-oh.
Serial killers. I'm always hoping they never get caught. So I've compiled a list of suggestions to help them stay on the loose longer. That way they can provide me with maximum entertainment. Here's my message to the killers. If you're looking for some form of perverted attention and publicity, I can't help you. But if you just want to kill a lot of people one by one, I'm your guy. Here's how you can maximize the time it will take the police to apprehend you. Make sure your victims are not all the same types. Kill a variety of people. Tall, short, rich, poor, male, female, young, old. But don't kill them in any particular order. Do two old men in a row, then do a young woman, then a teenage boy. Mix blondes and brunettes and long hair and short. Don't bother with prostitutes. Vary the locations where you grab your victims and vary the times of day. Try to do your work in heavily populated areas where there are more murders to begin with. If at all possible, travel around the country and kill each victim in a different state. Never kill two people in the same city within a year. And don't travel in a straight line. Randomness is your greatest ally. Kill each of your victims in a completely different manner. Do some really weird ones. Then do some ordinary ones. Sexual, non-sexual, ritual, non-ritual. Don't specialize. Patterns are your enemy. Dispose of the bodies as far from the murder sites as possible. Always at least 100 miles.
Man, this
bury
is creepy.
Some, burn some, and dissolve others in lime and acid. If you encounter any chance witnesses to any part of the killings or the disposals, they should be killed and disposed of with a minimum of fuss. And be sure to dispose of them separately. When driving to the murder, or especially the disposal sites, be careful not to break the law or have an accident. Use cash for everything. Don't stay in motels. Drive a late model van-type vehicle you can sleep in. And don't park it where the police might be expected to patrol. Have a large food supply and eat in the vehicle. If possible, change vehicles after every murder. Don't write notes to the police or taunt them in any way. It's dumb. Don't save newspaper clippings. Don't even read the newspaper accounts. Don't keep souvenirs from any of the victims. And start watching the CSI shows on CBS and the Law and Order shows on NBC. Every now and then, you'll pick up some piece of information that will help you avoid mistakes. Be smart and stay alive. Some of us are counting on you.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, for those people that do support the serial killer movement, you know, I think there's plenty to be learned there. But then, okay, so I found another one, John, that,
okay,
that's a good follow-up to the serial killer instructional manual. This is about the death penalty, because obviously once we catch these people, there's only one way we can dispose of them in America.
Well, have you know this one has 1.1 million hits on it.
Yeah, there's only one way for a serial killer, right, folks? You know,
the same way we made up the death penalty.
Let me
impose the death penalty on them.
As he starts talking immediately. Yes, here we go.
The same way we made up the death penalty. We made them both up, sanctity of life and the death penalty. Aren't we versatile? And you know, in this country now, there are a lot of people who want to expand the death penalty to include drug dealers. This is really stupid. Drug dealers aren't afraid to die. They're already killing each other every day on the streets by the hundreds. Drive-bys, gang shootings, they're not afraid to die. Death penalty doesn't mean anything unless you use it on people who are afraid to die. Like the bankers who launder the drug money. The bankers who launder the drug money. Forget the dealers. You want to slow down that drug traffic, you got to start executing a few of these fucking bankers. White, middle-class Republican bankers. And I'm not talking about soft American executions like lethal injection. I'm talking about fucking crucifixion, folks. Let's bring back crucifixions, a form of capital punishment that Christians and Jews of America can really appreciate. And I'd go a little further. I'd crucify people upside down. Like St. Peter, feet up, head down, and naked. I'd have naked upside-down crucifixions on TV once a week at halftime of the Monday night football game. The Monday night crucifixions. You'd have people tuning in don't even care about football. Wouldn't you like to hear Dan Dierdorf explain why the nails have to go in at a certain angle? And I'll guarantee you one thing. You start executing, you start nailing one white banker per week to a big wooden cross on national TV, you're going to see that drug traffic begin to slow down pretty fucking quick. Pretty fucking quick. You won't even be able to buy drugs in schools and prisons anymore. Now, I don't care about capital punishment one way or another, because I know it doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything except maybe satisfy a kind of biblical need for revenge. You know, if you read the Bible, you see that it's full of retribution and revenge. So really, capital punishment is kind of a religious ritual. It's a purification rite. It's a modern sacrament. And as long as that's true, I say, let's liven it up a little. I honestly believe if you make the death penalty a little more entertaining and learn to market it correctly, you just might be able to raise enough money to balance the stupid fucking budget. Balance the stupid fucking budget. And don't forget, the polls show the American people want capital punishment and they want a balanced budget. And I think even in a fake democracy, people ought to get what they want once in a while just to feed this illusion that they're really in charge. Let's use capital punishment the same way we use sports and television in this country to distract people and take their minds off how bad they're being fucked by the upper 1%. Now, unfortunately, Monday Night Football doesn't last long enough. What we really need is year-round capital punishment on TV every night with sponsors. Gotta have sponsors. I'm sure as long as we're killing people, Marlboro Cigarettes and Dow Chemical will be proud to participate. Proud to participate. Balance the stupid fucking budget. And let me say this to you, my interesting Judeo-Christian friends, not only do I recommend crucifixions, I'd be in favor of bringing back beheadings. Beheadings on TV, slow motion, instant replay. And maybe you could let the heads roll down a little hill and fall into one of five numbered holes. Let the people at home gamble on which hole the head is going to fall into. And you do it in a stadium so the mob can gamble on it too. Raise a little more money. And if you want to expand the violence a little longer to sell a few more commercials, instead of using an axe, you do the beheadings with a handsaw. Hey, don't bail out on me now, goddammit. The blood is already on our hands. All we're talking about is a matter of degree. You want something a little more delicate? We'll do the beheadings with an olive fork. That would be nice, and it would take a good goddamn long time. There's a lot of good things we could be doing. When's the last time we burned someone at the stake? It's been too long. Here's another form of capital punishment. Comes out of a nice, rich religious tradition. Burning people at the stake. Sponsor, Bridgeford Charcoal. And you put it on TV on Sunday mornings. The Sunday morning evangelicals send us an offering, praise Jesus, human bonfire. You don't think that would get big ratings in this sick fucking country? Shit, you'd have people skipping church to watch this stuff. And you take the money they send in the offerings and you use it to balance the budget. What about boiling people in oil? Boy, those were the days, weren't they? You get the oil going real good, you know, a nice high rolling boil. And then slowly at the end of a rope, you lower the perpetrator head first into the boiling oil. Huh? You talk about fun shit. And just to encourage citizen participation, you let the mob in the stadium control the speed of the rope. Good, clean, wholesome family entertainment. The kids will love it. The kids will love it. And at the same time they're enjoying themselves, we're teaching them a nice Christian moral lesson. Boiling people in oil. Sponsor, Crisco. And maybe instead of boiling all these guys, every now and then you could French fry a couple of them, you know? French fried felons. Dip a guy in egg batter just for a goof, you know? Kind of a tempura thing, huh? Jeffrey Dahmer never thought of this yet, did he? Jeffrey Dahmer, eat your heart out. Which is an interesting thought in and of itself. All right, enough nostalgia. What about some modern forms of capital punishment?
So, George, rest in peace, buddy. We appreciate your feedback.
That's sick humor. Oh, my goodness.
Lord have mercy.
Whoa. Well, now you had another one lined up, though.
This is the immortal Bill Hicks, who passed on in 94, sadly, from pancreatic cancer. Very sad, but very, very funny guy. A comics comic. I'm sure any stand-up comedian out there worth their weight in gold would vouch for Bill Hicks' influence on stand-up comedy and on the free-thinking movement in general. He was a comedian that I think had a deeper influence than just comedy. I think he really provoked thought through his art form and through his medium. And I think that's what a great comic does. You know, Carlin, whether you thought any of that was too rough to listen to, I understand, but Carlin got people to think.
My screen's froze up.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, he got people to think. He got people to re-examine their own thoughts, and usually the laughs were defensive laughs, although I think Hicks was even better because they weren't always defensive laughs. They were more like power laughs. Did you get it?
Yeah.
Right on. All right, here we go. This was a rare interview that I found with Bill Hicks shortly before he passed on. I'm sorry, is this the one on War and Freedom?
Yeah.
Okay, this might not be the interview. I think this might actually be stand-up footage, but this is Bill Hicks on War and Freedom.
Now, you know, selling weapons to everyone, getting that military-industrial complex vote happening for him. Sold 160 fighter jets to Korea, then 240 tanks to Kuwait, and then goes around making speeches why he should be commander-in-chief because we still live in a dangerous world. Thanks to you, you fucker. What are you doing? Last week, Kuwaitis had nothing but rocks. Quit arming the fucking world, man. You know he armed Iraq. I wondered about that, too. You know, during the Persian Gulf War, those intelligence reports would come out. Iraq, incredible weapons. Incredible weapons. How do you know that? Well, we looked at the receipt. But as soon as that check clears, we're going in. What time's the bank open? 8? We're going in at 9.
See, you know what bugged me about the whole election? Was that they made it, you know, they totally reduced us to this worship of money, and that's what they made the whole election about, was taxes, you know, voting with your wallet. You know what I mean? People would say to me, Bill, you vote for Clinton, he's going to raise your taxes. Okay? I mean, he'll tell you he's not. But he's gonna. A vote for Clinton is a vote for higher taxes, Bill. See, I have news for you, folks. There's other reasons not to vote for George Bush than taxes, okay? I don't know what's happened to us as a world. Maybe 12 years of Republicanism has made us think this way. But the reason I didn't vote for George Bush is because George Bush, along with Ronald Reagan, presided over an administration whose policies towards South America included genocide. So, yeah, you see, the reason I didn't vote for him is because he's a mass murderer. Yeah, okay. I'll pay that extra nickel on, you know, a liter of petrol, just knowing little brown kids aren't being clubbed to death like baby seals in Honduras, so Pepsi can put a plant down there. I'll pay the extra nickel. That's what bugged me about Bush, man. This whole thing about him being the foreign policy expert. You know what I mean? Well, you know, when it comes to foreign policy, George Bush is the man I trust. He's got the, you know, experience and the Look at the coalition against Iraq. Incredible. Incredible. That huge coalition, that giant coalition that included England. Yeah, that must have been hard. The two predominantly white nations going blowing the shit out of this little brown nation. What a hard sell that must have been for John Major, huh?
John, George Bush, how are you? Good. We have a disgruntled masses getting really bored here. How about a little fireworks? Well, let's go through the Rolodex. No, Noriega got him. Oh, here's one. Saddam Hussein. That'll look good. Let's go kill some sand niggers, yeah? Brilliant, brilliant. We'll be there. Right, right. We'll be there. Brilliant.
People often ask me where I stand politically. It's not that I disagree with Bush's economic policy or his foreign policy. It's that I believe he was a child of Satan here to destroy the planet Earth. A little to the left. And it's weird. Politics does make strange bedfellows, man. You know, when the dust settles to see what side you're on. It's really odd. You know what I mean? I was reading in the paper on Wednesday after the election's over, and there's a quote from Saddam Hussein going, "We have nothing against America. We just want to see George Bush beheaded and his head kicked down the road like a soccer ball." I'm thinking, that's what I want to see. Cool. Me and Hussein, we're like this, man. Saddam.
The point I'm making is about the idea of freedom of expression, and I believe that that there's this agenda in mainstream media, and I think it's fairly easy to back this up, to keep people stupid, docile, and apathetic, and therefore the elite who own these corporations and the families that own the corporations, even fewer people, their agenda is to keep us stupid and apathetic. That's why I love public access, and again, thanks for having me on.
We have figured it out. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
What about Clinton? Is there any hope in Clinton? There's no fucking hope in that guy. They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here's Love Connection. Watch this and get fat and stupid. By the way, keep drinking beer, you fucking morons.
Bum, bum, burner.
Do audiences get upset sometimes by what you say?
Yeah.
In America, anyway.
Occasionally, there are some members of the audience who don't find it funny, and therefore they paid money, therefore they get upset, yeah. What am I supposed to do when half the people are going, that was great, and the other half are going, you're evil. Is it my job to go into their lives and try and please them? I actually had a woman say, why can't you do things that appeal to everyone? That's impossible. What a burden. No one's done that yet. That will be a challenge. I will please all people. And I also got, someone made a comment at the club going, we don't come to comedy to think. Gee, where do you go to think? I'll meet you there. We don't have to do this here.
Isn't there a sort of halfway between?
But my way is halfway between. I mean, this is a nightclub, and, these are adults. And what do you expect? What you're going to see on TV? No, this isn't TV live. And also, it's my show.
Yes.
What am I supposed to do? Change my own outlook and my beliefs to be what to them? I try to talk to the audience the same way I talk to my friends, to take away the artifice of show business and actually have a feeling of a conversation going on. If some of the audience gets offended, then they're saying to me, I don't want to be your friend. And that's fine.
But what's your background? Where do you come from?
I come from a Southern Baptist household. Does that
make
sense?
What does your mom and dad think?
They don't like it at all.
They don't?
No.
offensive. Would you
mind them coming to see it?
Not at all. No, they come to see me all the time. They don't get it, you know. My dad, Bill, do you have to use the F word in your act? Bob Hope doesn't need to use the F word in his act. Yeah, well, Dad, Bob Hope doesn't play the dives I play.
Yeah, right. So you don't so much give them what they want, you give them what you want.
Sure. I you know why? Because I honestly believe that we're all the same. And I think to go, well, I'll give them what they want, is very condescending. And I don't try to condescend to people, you know? And that's why I treat them like my friends. And I guess that's a shocking way to behave in this world for some people.
It's admirable, actually.
For some people, but I don't sit there and go, well, you are all a bunch of idiots, so I will do things I don't believe in to amuse you.
But they want to be entertained, don't they?
Well,
I mean, they want to
when
laugh.
Did thinking not become entertaining?
They don't want to think.
They don't want to think. What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to go out and tickle them individually? We have to express an idea here.
Well, this is why we want to put something on TV that does question these, where one draws the line. What is
there are no
acceptable
lines.
And what...
There are no lines. I say, erase all the lines.
Yes, but erase that's what our program is all about.
Well, it's all very well to say that, but it's not the, you know, it's very good to say.
It's where you can draw the line.
Can I recommend some jugglers that you might like?
Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace. Thank you very much. You've been great. I hope you enjoyed it. London, you're fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow, Bill Hicks, man.
Oh, the man was a genius.
How many goosebumps when he was doing the whole thing about, you don't play the dives I play, you know?
Well, and, he was being right on, just right square, you know?
And I talk to people like they're my friends, and that's a shocking thing in this world. God, I totally understand what you mean, Bill Hicks.
He died in 1994.
I totally understand.
Wow.
Yeah. At 32, what a loss.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Yeah, awesome guy.
Anyways, rest in peace. Another great one that passed on before us. That inspired us. It's been that kind of day, man. Even you bringing in MCA and Beastie Boys just felt like right in the same wheelhouse, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you.
You know? What do you got?
Well, we have the best of Mitch Hedberg.
Now, once again, this dude, I guess, did one of his last performances ever at Washington University in the St. Louis U-City Loop, where Sav Gray is right now. U-City being Washington University. And I guess some friends of mine were at that show. It was like 3 days before his passing. I think it was 06 or 07. Mitch also is right around 33 or 34. But he had a great set. They said he was in an affable mood. Partied with those college kids all night. Fell asleep in some kid's Lazy Boy recliner chair.
Had a full
woke
day.
Woke up the next morning, said thank you, left, was very gracious. They said he had some of the best energy of any of the performers that they'd ever brought through as promoters.
What was his cause of death?
Heroin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Self-inflicted. Yeah.
Wow.
Sad. But anyways, here's the best of Mitch Hedberg, not the worst, which is the way he passed, but the best is here. I almost think of him as kind of like a half-baked Stephen Wright, you know? And I love Stephen Wright, too. There's another guy we could play for sure.
I was going to have my teeth whitened, but then I said, fuck that, I'll just get a tan instead. Vending machines are a big part of my life. I like when you reach into the vending machine to grab your candy bar. That flap goes up to block you from reaching up. That's a good invention. Before that, it was hard times for the vending machine owners. What candy bar are you getting? That one? And everyone on the bottom row? I don't have any children, but if I had a baby, I would have to name it. So I'd buy a baby naming book, or I would invite somebody over who had a cast on. I think they could take sesame seeds off the market and I wouldn't even care. I can't imagine 5 years from now saying, damn, remember sesame seeds? What does a sesame seed grow into? I don't know. We never give them a chance. What the fuck is a sesame? See, I write jokes for a living, man. You know, I sit at my hotel at night, I think of something that's funny, then I go get a pen and I write it down. Or if the pen's too far away, I have to convince myself that what I thought of ain't funny. I get a cold sore, I hate to say it, Minnesota, but in a cold sore, I put Carmex on it, because Carmex is supposed to alleviate cold sores. I don't know if it does help, but it will make them shiny and more noticeable. It's like cold sore highlighter. Maybe they could come up with an arrow that heals cold sores. But I got to be in a movie. I had a small scene in the movie. But I got to act with Peter Frampton. He was in the movie. And we had to smoke pot for our scene. But it was fake pot. Do not buy pot on a movie set. But I got to smoke fake pot with Peter Frampton. That's a cool story. It's as cool as smoking real pot with a guy who looks like Peter Frampton. I've done that way more. You know, there's a fishing show on TV. They catch the fish, but they let it go. They don't want to eat the fish, but they do want to make it late for something. Where were you? I got caught. Bullshit. Let me see the inside of your lip. I want to hang a map of the world in my house. Then I'm going to put pins into all the locations that I've traveled to. But first, I'm going to have to travel to the top two corners of the map so it won't fall down. Xylophone is spelled an X. That's wrong. Xylophone is X. I don't fucking see it. It should be a Z up front. Next time you have to spell xylophone, use a Z. And if someone says, hey, that's wrong, say, no, it ain't. If you think that's wrong, then you need to have your head Z-rayed. It's like X wasn't given enough to do, so they had to promise it more. Okay, you won't start a lot of words, but we will give you a co-starring role in Tic-Tac-Toe. And you will be acquainted with hugs and kisses. And you will mark the spot. And you will make writing Christmas easier. You know, I'm sick of following my dreams, man. I'm just gonna ask where they're going and hook up with them later.
Thanks, that's Chuck there. How about a round of applause for Chuck? He does. My friend asked me if I wanted a frozen banana. I said no, but I want a regular banana later, so yeah. Hello, Dad. At the end of my letters, I like to write, P.S. This is what part of the alphabet would look like if Q and R were eliminated. Severed foot is the ultimate stocking stuffer. I think foosball is a combination of soccer and shish kebabs. Foosball fucked up my perception of soccer. I thought you had to kick the ball and then spin round and round. I can't do a backflip, much less several. Simultaneously with two other guys that look just like me. I think Bigfoot is blurry. That's the problem. It's not the photographer's fault. Bigfoot is blurry, and that's extra scary to me. Because there's a large, out-of-focus monster roaming the countryside. Run, he's fuzzy. Get out of here. Gotta go. I mumble a lot off stage. I'm a mumbler. If I'm walking with a friend and I say something, he won't hear me. He'll say, what? So I'll say it again, but once again, he doesn't hear me. So he says, what? But really, it's just some insignificant shit that I'm saying. But now I'm yelling, that tree is far away.
I was in downtown Boise, Idaho, and I saw a duck. And I knew the duck was lost, because ducks ain't supposed to be downtown. There's nothing for him there. So I went to a Subway sandwich shop. I said, let me have a bun. But she wouldn't sell me just the bun. She said I had to have something on it. She told me it's against regulations for Subway to sell just the bun. I guess the two halves ain't supposed to touch. So I said, all right, we'll put some lettuce on, which I did. They said, that'll be $1.75. I said, it's for a duck. They said, all right, well, then it's free. See, I did not know that. Ducks eat for free at Subway. Had I known that, I ordered a much larger sandwich. Let me have the steak fajita sub. But don't bother ringing it up. It's for a duck. There are 6 ducks out there, and they all want Sun Chips. Now, if I was to give a duck bread, I'd give him Pepperidge Farm bread, because that's just fancy. It's wrapped twice. So you open it, and it still ain't open. That's why I don't buy it. I don't need another step between me and toast.
Chadberg, rest in peace. That shit was making us cackle up in here.
Yeah, it's pretty silly, yeah. Wow.
He's got a lot of great stuff. I know if you dig on YouTube, there's a lot of footage of him from back in the day that's definitely worth going through. I looked at a lot of other funny stuff I didn't even bring, you know? That's one of the great rewards of doing research for a show. It's just it's all true. The stuff you see that maybe you don't get to play people. But Cat Williams has a lot of really great YouTube stuff out there.
Hmm.
Not always that translatable to radio, though. You know, sometimes it's better with audio-visual dynamic there. But I felt like Mitch Hedberg, especially, just what a great voice, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great voice.
And obviously a thinker as well, you know, yeah. Really, yeah.
Like a goofball, total stoner goofball genius. So, okay, did you find that Zach footage from Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher?
Was that the one?
Yeah.
Okay, because I see him, yeah, sitting there with, that is Bill Maher.
Yeah, it's Zach Galifianakis of Hangover fame on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect from HBO. And it's some riffing on smoking weed. So that's just the last of the funny stuff I brought today. But I hope you guys have enjoyed it. If you've been offended, then I've done my job. And that's
nothing
good.
As good
I
as
hope
a
that
whip.
Made you laugh, too.
Yeah. All right. Let's bring out Zach. He is the actor-comedian who stars on HBO's Bored to Death, and whose new movie, Due Date, opens November 5th. Zach Galifianakis is over here. Zach. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Look who's here, everybody. Republican, Democrat, we all love The Hangover, right? I mean, that was an apolitical scene.
That's right.
You bring people together.
That's right, unity, unity. Unity through jerking a baby off.
Right. Now, I don't think I have seen you since I did your VH1 show.
We've seen each other about 10 times, Bill.
I went. No, we have not.
Yeah, that was
no,
11 years ago or so.
It was 11 years ago. What was the name of that show?
Roy Behar something? No, I don't remember. Late World was Zach.
It was
Late
your
World.
Show. You had a show. How many remember that show? See, you have a lot of fans. What have you been doing since then?
I didn't know that show was canceled. Thanks.
No.
I've still been doing the show. It's in the form of a podcast now.
Well, actually, your podcast is hysterical.
Thank you very much.
I've seen his there's some amazing people who do it.
Oh, the
web.
Between Two Ferns.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a. It's so funny, and you kind of play an asshole on that. On that, your character on that is sort of an asshole.
Right.
How do you manage that?
Well, it's I think I'm kind of probably a real jerk in real life, like in the back of my mind. But I just come from a polite family, so but what I'm thinking right now is not polite. you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to say, I have the pants version of your jacket.
Okay. Now,
I want to say, I want
to
say,
wrong to bring up the jacket.
I
want to
say, I want to say, it's nice to be sitting at a table with the Middle Eastern version of Mr. Clean.
Oh no, you didn't.
I want to say another hacky joke.
Zach.
Sorry, that was hacky.
You're
that was hacky and easy.
Me.
I apologize.
I apologize. Now, let's talk about your career. You are a comet in show business. I mean, has anyone risen lately? I mean, you were at that point in your career. You were.
Yeah, really? Bill, things are going pretty well.
They really are. You were at that point in your career now where you are going to make so many movies in a row that some of them have to be bad. I mean, it happened to Jack Black. It happened to Owen Wilson. You're right at that place.
Marmaduke was pretty good.
How many movies are you going to make in the next 5 years? How many of them are going to suck?
I plan on 80% of them being bad. Just so I can buy, you know, a new Subaru Outback. And then 20%, you know, will be good.
But it feels good to be hot, doesn't it?
Well, I think I'm kind of smart enough to know that all these fires go out eventually, so I'm just trying to make use of it while I can.
And you're kind of a reclusive guy, right? I mean, you live out in the woods in North Carolina.
I do live.
You look like you live out in the woods.
No, this is for a part to play Bruce Valanche at 15. Usually. This is for research. I live in the mountains of North Carolina.
Right. Yep. You live out there with like the abortion bombers and like crazy people.
Yeah, I don't. I think politically, I don't probably fit in with the people, but they're very nice people.
You know what? Interesting, and I did a lot of research about you. Your uncle, what was it? Nick Galifianakis.
Galifianakis. Right.
Nick Galifianakis.
Nick Galifianakis
was a congressman in North Carolina,
right.
who ran against Jesse Helms and lost because Jesse Helms' slogan was Jesse Helms, he's one of us. A guy named Galifianakis, not even close.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah, and the weird thing is all my family voted for Jesse. No, not true. But yeah, that was kind of the beginning of all that kind of Atwater that did all that stuff.
Right.
And it was kind of a famous election because of that. It turned the election around within 2 weeks of the...
Well, here's an interesting story from North Carolina I saw last week. You know D.A.R.E.? What is that? You know everything, Lawrence. What does that stand for? The drug, the anti-drug police program.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's something. Anyway, they've done many...
I know almost everything.
Right. They've done many studies. They found out it's completely ineffective. It doesn't stop kids from doing drugs.
Oh, right.
Doesn't stop them in the future. The police keep doing it. Okay, last week, a fifth grader narked on his parents after he heard a speech from the cops about D.A.R.E. And, okay... He brought in the parents' joints. He knew that the parents had joints. The police arrested the parents, so they're in jail, and the kid was removed to social services. And the D.A.R.E. officer said it was a success. Because who knows what could have happened. Those parents could have eaten a whole carton of cookies.
So I think, again, another reason not to have kids. Because they'll tattle on you.
Okay. So I bring this up because it was your home state and also because we are facing a big proposition here in California on Tuesday. Prop 19 will allow you to grow 25 square feet of marijuana.
You gonna grow?
I'm going to swing by Home Depot today.
Yeah, really. Getting ready for it. Buy the heat lamps.
No. I gave all that up when I got saved.
Oh, really? How's that going for you? Is that going well? Are you liking it? Feels good?
But what is so sad is that no Democrat has backed Prop 19 out here. And this is so typical of the Democrats. They have a great case to make. It, just in what we would save on stupid law enforcement... of this, we would save about $8 or $9 billion. We could get about, nationally anyway, we could get about the same $8 or $9 billion nationally on taxes. This could pay for, listen to this, enough to send every 3- and 4-year-old to a quality preschool, which would prevent way more crime.
Have you donated to the campaign?
I have not.
But you support it?
I do.
But so it's not running well in the polls. So Democrats, had they attached themselves to it, would have been attaching themselves to something that was actually less popular than the Democrats are in California right now. I mean, Jerry Brown's running way ahead of that proposition. You know.
I agree with that. I think it's a tricky thing to. I mean, that's not really part of my life.
Oh, wait, I did contribute, but it was a wedding present. Somebody, yeah, I forgot. Yes, I'm sorry.
But I think I have to agree. It's a tricky thing politically to jump on that bandwagon because I think that maybe people see it as taboo still.
It's a ballot measure, Bill, because no politician, even if they thought it was a good idea.
Oh my God! Oh.
Yeah. As I was saying.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we went there. I'm gonna pass the mic.
Okay. One thing I'm going to throw out there is that I have some friends who've been growers in Humboldt County, and the growers in Humboldt County are getting out the vote against the proposition.
Right.
And I honestly think
right,
that this is one of the...
Right, because the profit when you have prohibition, just like liquor with Al Capone,
yeah, look, that
is a lot higher.
That is totally legit, but I personally...
Oh, my God, look at those dragons!
No.
But that's my point. I think that's what people think of it.
Right.
You know,
but yes. I think that there is a legitimate
that
issue
is exactly
here. I think people should be allowed to grow their own. I don't think that we want to commercialize marijuana.
Right.
That's my concern.
I have another question. The most popular name in the United Kingdom, Great Britain, this was in the news this week, for babies this year was Muhammad. Am I a racist to feel I'm alarmed by that? Because I am. And it's not because of the race, it's because of the religion. I don't have to apologize, do I, for not wanting the Western world to be taken over by Islam in 300 years?
If you're with NPR, you'd be fired.
Right.
Yep.
That's so similar to Juan Williams, who said last week,
No, it's worse. It's way worse than what Juan Williams said.
What I'm saying?
What you just said was way worse.
Really?
I've got to say, as a Raihan Salam, I'm pretty comfortable with Muhammad's. I have some uncles named Muhammad, and I think that they're pretty decent guys.
I think the,
right out there.
I think the name Muhammad isn't the problem.
Actually is
it's my aunt's name.
Look, I think England has far bigger problems with Islam than they do with the names of their children. I think Sharia law being institutionalized in England is probably a bigger problem.
Sharia law is being institutionalized.
It's a parallel legal system in England. That's a bigger problem than King Muhammad.
Then I'm right. I should be alarmed, and I don't apologize for it. Okay, last issue. Now, I bring this up because, Lawrence, I was on your show last week, and after I was on your show, Rush Limbaugh talked about me being on your show. He talked about the supposed comedian Bill Maher. Okay.
You don't make him.
And we were talking about Christine O'Donnell and her misinterpretation, we thought, of the First Amendment and separation of church and state. Rush said separation of church and state, it's not in the Constitution, conceptually, contextually, or otherwise. Well, it is conceptually and contextually, just not literally. The Founding Fathers never once wrote anything about there being a wall of separation. Well, yeah, they did. Literally in letters. He also said, these people, meaning you and I, are interpreting it to say Pat Robertson shouldn't run for office. Have you ever said that?
Which we didn't. No.
Okay, again.
And he did run for office and we didn't complain.
Right.
Well, he might have complained.
They just pull things out of their ass. Yeah. They do. We never said Pat Robertson couldn't run for office.
So you never exaggerate for effect? That's a revelation to me, I've got to
say.
Well,
I'm a comedian. He's not.
Both entertainers.
He's an entertainer?
He said something like, you and I represent the ugliness of liberalism, which okay. I immediately had put on the website for my show as the banner quote. And I thanked him very much for putting me in your company, Bill.
I don't exaggerate facts. Okay, I exaggerate when they know it's a joke. And I've got some for you now. It's time for New Rules, everybody. Thank you, panel. New Rules.
Okay, there we go. Back. Oh, hit the monitor.
I know all that wasn't Galifianakis, but I thought it's interesting because look at how these people, even back then in 08, and Bill Hicks in 94, and George Carlin in 2010, and... all these different comedians. Oh, and Hedberg not being necessarily the political ideologue, but all these people thinking in all these different eras and decades, and they come up with very similar ideas that may just seem like rebellious rhetoric to the opposition, but I would say the opposition to people like them are people that don't really want to think deeply, because all these guys are doing are making challenging statements as comedians, as entertainers.
Absolutely. But, you know, they represent a certain mindset that, I think the other mindset, you know, has trouble comprehending.
And that's uncensored thinking.
That's, you know, who they're trying to reach.
That is the mindset that threatens so. And I get it, I guess. But like Bill Hicks said, if you can't speak to people like they're your friends, then you really are just kind of a shill, just doing stuff just because people tell you to or because it's more popular or et cetera, you know? I know here at Kill Radio, there's nothing we hate more than a sellout.
Well, you got to do something for a living, though.
That's true. So, you know, you could sell dreams to the occupiers. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
sell camping gear to the people sleeping out by the Metrolink that I saw today on my way here. That were lined up in a little shanty town by the link.
Those kind of people don't have a lot of money. They'll go to Target.
They did have some Eddie Bauer looking camping gear, though. So at least they're not completely in the elements there.
Well, that also would indicate that they've probably been out in the elements for a while. You know, to have that kind of expertise at it, you know?
It's true. Experts. So I know I had come in here wanting to make a plug for my buddy's blog and upcoming book. I got it pulled up on the computer. It's Toth's blah blah blog. And if you go on Facebook and type in "transparency is the apocalypse," that phrase, "transparency is the apocalypse," that group comes up. And you can find Toth's blah, blah, blog. And that's Toth, T-O-T-H. Toth's blah, blah, blog. Transparency is the apocalypse is part of the blog. And if you go back, you can start the book at chapter one. So it's Transparency is the Apocalypse, chapter one. I highly recommend, if you're interested in Julian Assange, the story of WikiLeaks, the story of Bradley Manning, and about Obama's intriguing ties to all of this, which he tries to weave in and juxtapose. Pretty intriguing read. And soon to be a book as well. So yeah, I wanted to definitely make a plug for that. Check it out. And I will actually read a little bit from it. But you got something pulled up. What do you got up there, John?
Nope, I'm still looking. Go ahead.
You're still looking? All right.
Yeah.
Well, let me come around over here for a second.
I mean, you know, I got loads of stuff. Look, I have all of this.
So this is Jonathan Toth from hoth.blogspot.com, if you're wanting to go straight to where I'm reading. And we'll read a little bit. We'll read chapter one.
Uh-oh.